Hello and welcome to Microbrew Midweek Edition of the Microbrew Podcast. The Milwaukee Brewers know their opponent for the 2025 National League Division Series. And oh, yes, that's right. It is the Chicago Cubs. The hated Cubs will be coming to Milwaukee on Saturday. They'll be here on Monday. The games shift to Wrigley Field on Wednesday and Thursday of next week. It's going to be something. Craig Counsell against his old team. Lots of animosity between the two fan bases. You know, I suppose in some cases, not as much animosity because, you know, everybody's got Cubs fans that are friends, right? Kind of. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm joined on the other line by Kurt Hoag, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt, it's the Cubbies. Are you ready for the madness of Chicago versus Milwaukee in a postseason series? We really haven't had anything like this except Bears Packers back in 2010. There's not really a comparable analog to this. So what are you looking forward to, Kurt? Are you excited?
Well, first, I'm not going to be here for your Bucks Bulls 2022 slander.
You know what? That is a very good point. Or even before that, when Giannis threw Mike Dunleavy to the floor.
True.
A seminal moment in the rise of the Bucks. And hey, the Milwaukee Bucks, they eliminated rookie Michael Jordan from the playoffs back in the day. He did not get eliminated many more times after that. But you know, you're right. There's some Chicago Milwaukee stuff.
People try telling me that Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time, and he lost to the Bucks. He lost to the Bucks.
Those are some good Bucks teams. How dare you?
Stop putting nuance to it. Stop putting nuance to it.
Well, LeBron has lost a lot more in the playoffs than Michael Jordan has,
but never to the Bucks.
Never to the Bucks.
Never to the Bucks.
Brandon Jennings once said Bucks and six.
Tried.
People may remember the Bucks and six, which was actually Heat and four. It was actually not Bucks and six at that time. He was saving it for a later moment. You're right. There has been some Chicago Milwaukee competition before in the postseason. I am not going to say that any of that was on the level of Bears Packers, nor on the level of this, a best of five series with the winner moving on to the NLCS. I think it's a bad matchup, but we've said that before. I don't know how badly I feel like it's a matchup anymore. I feel like with Cade Horton out, I don't know if I've been super impressed with the Cubs lately.
We've said that before, and it's never worked out. I thought you were like normally when you say that sentence, you caveat it with, but we were wrong.
Yeah.
That's never been wrong about that for the Brewers. Anyway, this time we might be wrong, though. That's what you didn't say, but I think you meant there.
That's right.
It is not a great matchup. However, the Brewers were five games better than this team this year, so I think we should not forget about that as we head into it.
Is it specifically a bad matchup because the Cubs have Dansby Swanson, Nico Horner, and Pete Crow Armstrong up the middle, three elite defenders at their positions, quite possibly three gold glovers at their positions, and that just makes it harder for a team that doesn't hit home runs to get on base and to keep the carousel turning? Is it as simple as that, or is there more to it than that?
I think that is there's more to it. So I have a story running this morning,
I love it.
Friday morning, the five most interesting matchups of this series. Number one, I didn't rank them, but number one, I think in my mind for sure is the Cubs defense against the way the Brewers play offense, but there's a little more, like there's more even within that. The Cubs don't walk guys. They fill up the zone. But this can go both ways. Like the Brewers do take walks. The Brewers do control the zone. Like they don't chase. So I think that is a very, very interesting matchup as well. Cause like you can view it in one lens. I think like the Cubs defense, you view it in one lens of like the Cubs control it, which frankly they do, but there's some other things like, but if the Brewers do draw walks, they have some say in that as well if they don't chase. So there's a lot, obviously, that goes into this series. A lot of interesting matchups. Some are favorable for the Brewers, some are not. But the defense, I think, is A1 for me because, if the Brewers hit home runs, that changes everything, obviously. And I think no one's picking against the Brewers if they come out and hit seven homers in four games. That would substantially turn the tables, but I don't know if anyone's predicting that from them. And like if they're not able to get a ton of walks, if they're not getting infield singles, you know, these bloopers that might otherwise fall, it does get a little more arduous for them. That is not a death sentence for the Brewers. Not at all. Their pitching is better than the Cubs' pitching is. I think their best hitters match up with the Cubs' best hitters. But yeah, I think we're going to see it throughout the series. And maybe it's both sides too. Maybe it's both sides that play incredible defense. Both these teams have really good defenders, especially up the middle.
Brewers will have the advantage of having all this time off where they can align their rotation. You know, Shota Imanaga is not going to be available right away. Neither, I don't know if Matthew Boyd, he didn't pitch that much on Tuesday, but I would assume he's not available for Saturday's game. I would assume they'll have him start on Monday. And, you know, Cade Horton is out. Maybe he's available by the end of the division series, but it's unclear. So it's not like they have a lot of big guns lined up. Tyone pitched, you know, Tyone just pitched on Thursday. So that doesn't leave very many options. You know, Colin Ray, maybe game one, Ben Brown. Like, I don't even off the top of my head.
Code Red. Give me a Colin Ray, Aaron Civale piggyback for five innings in game one.
Right. And that would be maybe incredible.
That might be it. I don't know. Maybe they could go. You're right. They could go Matt Boyd on 3 days rest. But I think if I'm the Brewers, I want that.
Of course you do. I mean, Matthew Boyd wasn't even that electric at the end of the year anyway. And the Brewers have hit him well.
They almost certainly won't do that. He was warming, I think, or available out of the bullpen for game three. But I think that's the Freddy Peralta game three situation. Like, it's his throw day. Get him ready. I highly doubt it'll be Boyd game one. He'll probably go game two. But you're right. The Brewers, even though we have our own questions about their starters beyond the top two and you know, some parts of their pitching staff, I think there's a little bit less of a question about their pitching staff. Although the Cubs, as we've seen, they are able to piece together like 5-6 innings from their bullpen too. So there are no slouches in that regard either.
Their bullpen definitely pitched better in September than they've been a little up and down all season long. You know, another former Brewer, Drew Pomeranz, is a big part of that. Taylor Rogers. Look at all we talk about Council. There's a lot of former Brewers in this mix, on this pitching staff in particular. Daniel Palencia came back from injury and looked really, really good in the wild card series. So he's somebody that the Brewers will have to reckon with at one point or another. None of this really, I guess, is frightening offhand, because I think where the Cubs really shine is with that lineup. And yet, you know, Kyle Tucker and Pete Crow-Armstrong had really quiet second halves, you know, Kyle Tucker especially, but he was hurt. So he really didn't do a whole lot down the stretch. And Pete Crow-Armstrong tailed off considerably. He's never been a high on base percentage guy, but I think just his swing decisions kind of caught up with him, and he struggled. Now, he's still a huge, huge part of what they do, huge defensively. But offensively, that lineup isn't as scary as it used to be. They still have Seiya Suzuki. They still have guys like, you know, Michael Bush, Ian Happ. These guys are power threats and dangerous, and they have tagged the Brewers at points this year. Cubs won 7 of the 13 games that they played against between the two teams this year. So their lineup is still scary. But, you know, I said before, like, this isn't the worst time to play the Cubs. It doesn't feel like the Cubs are maybe as dangerous as they had been at some point early in the season in April and May. I would have said this is unquestionably the best team in the division. They're going to be extremely difficult to stop. And I think they're better than the Brewers at pretty much everything. And I definitely don't think that anymore. I think that the Brewers can certainly hold their own here. I think the big question for me from the Brewers angle is, are we really going to see Jose Quintana in game three against his old haunts at Wrigley Field, old team, the Chicago Cubs? Is that really what we're going to see? Because game three is going to be a pivotal game. It always is. And man, is that really what the Brewers are going to do? I think it is, Kurt. I think it is.
I think it is, but it should not be for more than
three innings.
He can face Michael Bush a second time. Maybe if you want him to face Tucker a second time, like if he's rolling, I will concede that to you, but it should be no more than that. I think the Padres, even though they look kind of like Bungus in many regards for this entire series, which is, by the way, not alarming at all if you're a Brewers fan and you're like, wait a second, They have a low barrel rate too. We have a low barrel rate. That's no need for concern. Ignore it.
Padres and the Brewers are twins. They're twins. They're very similar teams.
Brewers are better, but yes, I stylistically pretty dang similar.
Correct. Yes.
There were a couple things that the Padres did that I think are interesting for the Brewers. One was game two, they pulled Cease in the fourth with PCA mm-hmm. up. Cease was kind of cruising, but also like Dylan Cease has like, the other time we've talked about him in this podcast is like, what if Freddie Peralta like made you even more nervous? What if you doubled how nervous you were watching? Like you trusted Freddie Peralta even less. Like double less than you do now. That's Dylan Cease. And they pulled him when he was cruising pretty good for PCA. I think that's an interesting spot where the Brewers could go to Rob Zestrizny, maybe Ashby, depending on the context. Like Pat Murphy needs to be willing to be aggressive with his bullpen in the series. That includes when Freddie Peralta is pitching. Like I don't know if Michael Bush, who's hitting leadoff, crushes right-handers. I don't know if he should face a single starter three times in the series. Now, maybe there's a game where, you know, either the starter's kind of wearing it, relatively speaking, or the starter's absolutely cruising and you got like a 3-run lead. That might be justifiable. But if it's close, like, buddy, you got to turn it over. You got to turn it over to the pen. You got to go to Aaron Ashby in that spot. You're going to have three lefties. Two of them are very high leverage. Rob Zestrizny, I think, is kind of going to be an interesting guy in this series because he does get lefties out pretty well, but then his right-handed numbers are not good. Like I think he has 7 walks to 5 strikeouts against righties this year. Is he a guy that comes in with 2 outs and Bush or PCA or Tucker is up? Like is that the spot for him? Because if like he's facing that lineup and then counsel flips the card on Murph and brings in some right-handers, or there's right-handers in the lineup, like Horner hits left-handers well, and he hits after Bush, like suddenly that matchup is less favorable for Milwaukee. There's going to be a lot of that in this series because I'm not going to be a ton of offense. Going to be close games. That's what these teams do. The bullpens are going to have a lot of say in it. So a lot of small things like that to follow.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be so much foolishness with the Cubs coming to town. I can't believe that we've reached a point where these two teams are at a, you know, facing each other in a playoff series. I wasn't positive we'd ever see it. You know, it's unlikely, first of all, because two teams are in the same division.
It did feel inevitable this year, though. I think for the last two months,
we
all saw this exact outcome coming.
And after watching the Dodgers play the Reds, it does feel like getting that top seed was hugely beneficial because not only do they have home field for all of this, they do not have to face the Dodgers, which good
luck
to the Phillies.
You're not facing Shohei on Saturday.
That's right.
Two facets. That's
right. You're facing Colin Ray. You could have had Shohei, and you probably are going to get Colin Ray. Yes. We love Code Red, but that's a W.
Blake Snell on full rest. Then Yamamoto at home on full rest game 3.
How about Matthew Boyd instead?
Yeah, they still got Tyler Glasnow. Like, the Cubs are a very good team. We have sung their praises here a lot, I think. Both of us would have picked them to win the division, like, even in early July. Mm-hmm. They're not the Dodgers when the Dodgers are rolling, and also the Dodgers have playoff Kike Hernandez.
That's true, and playoff Teoscar Hernandez, let's not forget. They look great.
The Brewers have a Hernandez in the system? Melvin!
No.
Melvin Hernandez.
He's a pitcher? Like he's 18 or something or 19? Is that who we're thinking
of? Uh-huh. Yeah, Mudcats this year.
Not available. Maybe they can bring back Jose Hernandez to throw out the first pitch.
They need a playoff Hernandez. Hey, they're signing a kid named Ashton Hernandez in this upcoming year's class. You thought this was a playoff pod? Buddy, we are dropping names. Ricky Moneys. You thought Jesus Made was a good name? No.
I'm sorry. They're signing somebody named Ricky Moneys. Spell that for me. How do we spell the last name?
Dollar dollar bill. Yo, that's how it's spelled.
You don't even know.
No, it's spelled like Moneys.
It's M O N E Y S. His name is Ricky Moneys. Come on, man. Future superstar. Like that's
like we are one
send him to Carolina immediately.
We are one for We are one for one on the names working out, man. Like,
yeah, it's Jesus Mate. Minor league player of the year for the Milwaukee Brewers. What a shock. Along with Tyson Harden, one of our guys, a pitcher who saw time at a couple different levels this year. Strike throwing machine, Tyson Harden, and Jesus Mate, who is the one. He's the one. Is he going to be here in 2026? Is there any chance? Not right away. End of the year?
No. I think he's closer at the start of Double A than Churio was when Churio started Double A. Part of that is his defense. Part of that is his swing decisions too. But like, his upside is not quite Jackson Churio's.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right.
Either way,
I think we see him in 27 though.
It is smart to allow him to develop. Now, who knows? Who knows? It would be the first player to start the year at Double A and finish in the big leagues. Cam Schlittler did so this year, I think, and he shoved tonight. He did the Tobias Myers, but actually got some run support.
Oh yeah, this was beyond what Tobias has done. I'm afraid this was unbelievable performance. And as we record this, the Yankees Red Sox game is not over, but it feels over. And if the Yankees win, as we expect, they will become the first team to lose game one of a wild card series and rally back to win, the first and only out of what 16 series to lose game one and come back and win. The Yankees winning means the Brewers will play at 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, 1:08 p.m.
I always knew a Devin Williams led team would achieve that feat. There was never a question in my mind. Down 1-0, yeah. Devin Williams team is the one I've got coming back.
Oh man, again, New York is involved. It's just the pain is still fresh. The pain is still fresh. We get a chance to make brand new pain here in the division series. So we promised a mailbag. We got some questions from listeners. Did the little call out on Twitter, Blue Sky, email. Thank you to everybody who participated. Appreciate all of you for sending in questions, but we're going to start with my question. I have a question first, Kurt, that I want to ask.
That's not the rule.
It's not,
you don't
but I'm going
to
break,
partake in the mailbag. Okay,
fine. I'm going to break the rule because I felt like this was kind of unrelated to anything, and I just want to know. They won 97 games. That's the best in Brewers history. Is this team really the best in Brewers history, do you think? Would you call this the best Brewers team in history?
Man.
I realize you haven't been alive for the vast majority of this, so hard to say, I suppose. You know what? Let me just answer it. Go ahead. For me to
go against the 82 Brewers. And yeah, that's me saying that. I mean, just the sheer fact of the Hall of Fame or like almost at that level talent that was on that team. I mean, Don Sutton gives you what, 4 Hall of Famers on that team, even if he wasn't, you know, that version of him was not Hall of Famer. And then on top of that, you have Cooper and Ogilvy and Gorman.
Yeah. I mean, the talent, subtract the Hall of Famers. The talent bench on that team is so deep. I couldn't tell you for sure that anybody on the current Brewers team will be a Hall of Famer. Jackson Churio maybe could be someday, but then you're saying, well, this was like early in his career. Like, he was 21 years old, so he hasn't fully realized yet. I don't think Yelich is on track to be a Hall of Famer at this point, even though you could convince me if he like kept doing this for the next 5 years or something.
My next answer would probably still be, here's the thing. I think 21 was their biggest missed opportunity. But that team couldn't hit. That team couldn't hit.
Yeah. That team is three aces and not much else.
I mean,
that's not fair. They had Josh Hader.
The best pitching they'll ever have in franchise history. No question about it. 11, I would say 11 if they didn't have my boy Uni B. Alleged criminal, right? Alleged.
I haven't kept up with that case. So okay. Yes, let's just say that.
All right, he did accused of some fraud. Speaking of which, him playing every game at shortstop might knock the 2011, like single-handedly knock the 2011 Brewers down a peg. Yeah. But this team, I think they're top three for me.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be, I guess, top three. I just, obviously so much, like if they go to the World Series, you're going to have to, how could you not consider them or call them that? But at the same time, like, still, if even if this team goes to the World Series,
could I honestly say that I think that they're better than the 82 team? Not a chance. But also, why the 82 not? Team has the the 82 team has the benefit of like hindsight. You know, like they were the best Brewers team for a generation. They had all the, you know, they had guys who were Hall of Famers. They had guys who filled in the gaps, guys who became like icons, and maybe these guys will become icons. And that doesn't even really speak to whether or not they're good baseball players. I just don't, you know, that 82 team to me is just like awesome 1 through 9. And then they got the pitchers too. And this team is a bunch of grinders and, you know, obviously a couple star type players. And
yeah,
they won 97 games. You can't say no to that, but
it is going to be bizarre to look back and not see a single offensive player besides Andrew Vaughn, short sample size caveat, to have an 800 OPS, like not a single one,
right? Yeah, it's and maybe like as time goes on, you'll look back on this team differently because the environment will have changed. Like maybe that'll become more common that really good teams are just defensive wizardry and not a lot of 800 OPSs. But yeah, this doesn't feel like a juggernaut. All they do is win.
The thing that this, like, there's not a lot of teams that have a legitimate chance to be paradigm shifters. And this Brewers team does, because if they win the whole thing, it's not like the Diamondbacks were not paradigm shifters when they made the World Series. They were like, oh, they're the embodiment of why you just try to get in. And then that gets overblown and everyone talks about just get in, when like reality, like most 98% of the time you become the Reds and you're cockroaches and then you get splattered. This team, like if they pull it off, they will have the benefit of 97 wins, best record in baseball. They will be looked at as a very, very deserving champion and sort of maybe, I don't know how much the narrative shifts, but certainly like you look at them in a way that you look at the 15 Royals where you're like, oh yeah, a small market team can do this. You can win it in a different way. And we're at a point right now in baseball where it doesn't feel like that because no one has done that since the 15 Royals. And I think even like, I think that team comes with a lot of like, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Terrence like Gore? Really?
They didn't feel like a great team.
James Shields? Who are the relief pitchers? Like the Wade Davis?
Yeah. Wade Davis, Aaron Crow.
Oh, he wasn't one of the big three. He wasn't one of the big three. Yordano Ventura, is he part of that?
Kelvin Herrera. He was rotation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kelvin Herrera was back there.
That's exactly how I feel about this team. The 2015 Royals Gregerson. Is how I feel about this team.
Yeah.
If the 2015 Royals had scored more runs, had the best run differential in baseball.
right. Okay. Let's get to the question.
They won a lot of games too. Yeah. Let's get to some real questions. All right. So we're starting with this question from NDI Friends on Blue Sky. It's more of a comment. If Milwaukee plays Seattle in the series, the team should wear home away Pilots uniforms for one game. Discuss. I will answer this one because I'm the one who foretold a Seattle Brewers World Series. Seattle Pilots, of course, 1969, one season before they basically kind of went bankrupt and moved the team to Milwaukee. Bud Selig brought the team with days to go before the start of the 1970 season. They kept the Seattle color scheme because they didn't have time to get new uniforms. So that's kind of partially why the old Brewers teams kind of look like old Mariners teams. You see old footage, you kind of maybe have a hard time. You see it and it's a little grainy. It's like, is that Mariners or Brewers? So there's some history there. It's not a lot of history. It's 1 year of history. Obviously they will not be wearing alternate uniforms because this is MLB and they would never do such a thing. They do not like fun things, but, it'd be cool to invoke a lot of the Pilots history. I'm into it. I'm into 1969 talking about Ball 4, Jim Bouton's book, Bouton. I don't know. Like the country, like the Middle Eastern country, Bhutan. With an H B-H-U. No, loved that book, by the way. I read it not that long ago, a couple years ago, and it's sensational. What a book. All right, let's move here. Scotty Robb, he's also on Blue Sky. He said, love the pod. Will Bowers get more starts in the outfield than Collins or Perkins? He did hit the home run right before Sal last year, as I was reminded by your interview with Sal, and Murph seems to love his bat. Oh, you have a copy of Ball 4 sitting on your desk.
Sorry, I'm reading Ball 4 right now. August 8th.
So I actually listened to it on tape.
Mike Hegan mentioned.
A lot of Brewers crossover there with Mike Hegan, former Brewers announcer, former Brewers player.
Marty Patton.
Marty Patton was a Brewer. He was a Brewer. He came from Seattle. that book was narrated on tape by Jim Boughton, and I didn't know it was Jim Boughton doing the narration. I believed it was not him. And I was so impressed with this guy because the emotions would, like, things would get emotional and the reader would get emotional. And I was just like, God, this guy is perfect. He sounds like he's just living these experiences. And then it wasn't until the very end of the book that I was like, this is actually Jim Boughton talking. Strong recommend if you listen to a book on tape. Anyway, Jake Bowers.
What's starts our question, in the outfield? Jake Bowers?
No. Yeah, is he going to get more starts in the outfield than Collins or Perkins?
No, he's not going to get any starts in the outfield.
Will he get any time in the outfield?
Well, there's a world in which he does, but I have a tough time seeing the Brewers putting Jake Bowers in the outfield.
Me too. I mean, it could happen based on like extra innings, late matchup situations.
I think they tried that, and then that game against, was it the Reds where he kicked the ball around? Yeah, that was like
he struggled.
That was like this is the Brewers. They don't play like that. They don't mess around with their defense.
That is true. All right, Keith Glazer, he's a Blue Sky follower as well. Do you think Mizorowski's inclusion depends on the opponent? He said Padres haven't seen him this year. Cubs have already gotten two looks at him. Obviously, we know the Cubs are the team that they've done.
I think that's a very good question. I don't know if this is necessarily Jacob Mizorowski answer, but like the Padres were one of the worst teams in baseball this year against fastballs. Yeah. They have a bunch of hitters like Arise can't hit fastballs. So I wondered if that gave, you know, Miz or Chad Patrick a more prominent role. I still think Chad Patrick's got a pocket in there, a pocket of righties to face. I don't think like it's the fact that he's seen the Cubs before. I think it's more like in the playoffs, it's more hitter dependent. What pitches, what arm angles does this guy struggle with, as opposed to this guy or that guy? And I don't know. I still think Miz is on the roster. Maybe we'll find out a little more tomorrow with the workout days.
Yeah, I think he's on the roster too. And I just, with only 12 pitchers, which is what we assume they go with, I just don't understand that. I mean, that means one of Patrick and Myers is definitely off, if not both of them are off.
Well, Patrick's not off.
I don't think so. I don't see how he can be. You're right. I think Patrick is that right-handed guy because Mears has struggled and Shelby Miller's hurt. I think that's Chad Patrick's job now. He's the guy who kind of has to fill that void. He was not one of the big three at the back of the bullpen. And I mean, I've said this before, but like starters are going to go four innings, right? Like maybe they make it five, maybe even six. Perish the thought, but maybe relievers are going to need to soak up many innings. If Miz is on the roster, he is going to be pitching in high leverage situations.
Well, I don't know about high leverage. Maybe
he's going to be pitching in leverage
as series goes on, but there's going to have to be you're going to have a spot for him. I mean, like even if you got a guy for extra innings, guess what? He doesn't get much more leverage than that, bub. So that's maybe where I see Robert Gasser fitting somewhere in here too. But
yeah.
Nick Mears, I think is sneaky important. I still feel confident about him getting righties out. His fastball looked good on what day were we there? Tuesday for the workout. He was one of the guys that was pitching. Although the fact that he was pitching Tuesday was not a great sign because it was Grant Anderson, Easton McGee, Craig Yoho, and one other fellow that I can't remember that's not going to be on the team. And Mears started that off, and I thought it looked pretty good. Like they had the StatCast info. His fastball's up to 96 in a pointless setting. That's pretty encouraging.
Yeah.
I still feel okay about him getting righties out, but it's like, man, how is he going to get a lefty out? He's been tentative to go in the zone with it. He doesn't get chased out of the zone. Like, is it the curveball? Like the slider doesn't work against lefties. I don't know. It's going to probably have to be four seam reliant. And boy, I think the Brewers know that too. And they'll have to use him effectively, but like you said, if they're going to win this thing in five games and the bullpen's going to pitch a lot, guess what, Nick Mears? You're pitching too.
Yeah. Is there any chance Logan Henderson slides onto this roster? Probably not for the DS, but at some point in this postseason?
Possibly, yeah, absolutely. He wasn't there on Tuesday. I believe he was throwing in Arizona, so maybe we'll get a chance to see him tomorrow and catch up and see how he's feeling. But like, I think he's like locked and loaded physically. Now the question is, look, it's a 23 year old kid, very little big league experience. You haven't seen him come back from this injury, like pitching a game in 2 months. What are you gonna do? Throw him in there? Probably not, but maybe. I think it's an intriguing arm.
All right, here's a question from Matthew Faust. He says, longtime listener, first-time emailer, writer-inner. First off, thanks for another excellent year of Microbrew. I listened to them all and enjoyed them 110%. I even made my wife, not a Brewers podcast connoisseur, listen to and enjoy JR's rendition of Be Prepared, which she enjoyed. the Lion King shout out from earlier this year. And my boys, also not Brewers podcast enjoyers, listened to Kurt's take on Gatorade, which they absolutely enjoyed. In any event, thank you for the great work all year. Thank you, Matthew Faust. All right, enough of the tomfoolery. I'm a Milwaukee original, transported to San Diego, and I was there for the first two games of the series in Petco. While the first one was exhilarating and the second one was not, they had one thing in common. Joey O, the rally killer, not being pulled for anyone else when it mattered. I am concerned this will be the Packers' special teams. While I understand that Murph wants his defense.
Oh no.
I love that reference. I love that comparison. While it's I understand so that good. Murph wants his defense in a tight game, it seems he should also want runs in a tight game too. What do we need to do to get Joey O, the rally killer, pulled in favor of anyone else with a bat when the time comes? Thanks again for an awesome year, and bring on the Cubs/Pods, which again is the Cubs. But
so here's what's concerning about that to me is on Sunday, I was texting with a couple of my buddies. We talked about the Packers in our group chat. And I was like,
special teams.
Yeah. I was watching the Vikings game. I think they blocked a kick on that sound right. And I was like, man, special teams coordinators now are getting really good at like finding little advantages. The Packers are losing on Sunday, or the Packers are losing tonight because of special teams. And sure enough, well, they didn't lose, but time and time again throughout Packers history, you can walk into a game and say, yep, special teams going to lose this game for us. And then you're right. Slam bang, it happens. So I'm not saying that's guaranteed going to happen here. Maybe this is playoff baseball. Weirder things happen. Like Packers special teams at no point in this history were suddenly going to get good in the playoffs. They were maybe just not going to lose you the game. Joey Ortiz could be good in the postseason. It's very much a baseball possibility. The answer to the question is you got to do like that promotion way back when. I don't even know what team or what year, but the fans held up signs telling the manager what he should do in a certain spot. And so Murph comes out, looks at the crowd, points to Bowers, he points to Ortiz, everyone holds up their sign, and he goes, all right, Jake, grab a bat. It's your turn. That's the way to ensure that you don't leave the bases loaded after getting them loaded with nobody out in the fifth inning.
I think Andre Monasterio is going to have a very big role in this postseason series, because I think he's going to get a lot of innings and potentially just as many as Joey Ortiz or even a little more on a game-by-game basis. I don't know if I'd actually go that far, but they're going to pull Joey Ortiz in big situations. Here's the thing I don't understand about Joey Ortiz. 283 hitter. His batting average is 283 with runners on base. That's good. Now, he doesn't do a ton of damage. We know this. He's got like I think the OPS is like 660 only, but like 283, you would think that's a pretty good hitter. Then the bases get loaded and he's 5 for 30. He's got one walk. And the thing that really gets me, zero sacrifice flies. He's had 31 plate appearances with the bases loaded this year, which again is like 17% of the Brewers' overall appearances with the bases loaded. And he has never once put a ball in the air for a sacrifice fly. That's what this team does. They all make sacrifice flies. They love sacrifice flies. Not Joey Ortiz with the bases loaded, who is horrendous with the bases loaded, and yet still quite good, at least in terms of batting average, with runners on base. Fascinating.
I've seen it.
You've seen it.
I've seen it. Joey Ortiz is getting a big hit with the bases loaded.
With the bases loaded, yeah, I
know. In this postseason.
It has to happen. It's like
it
written.
Has to happen. Like he's literally due. He's literally due.
second inning against Colin Ray slash whomever is pitching.
Sure. Yeah, that would work.
Bases loaded. Bases loaded. And Joey Ortiz comes to the plate and he lines one down the line. Right.
You know, he's like been sneaky good against lefties. I didn't realize that. I don't know if good's the right word, but like sneaky competent for sure against lefties. So I don't know what you're going to do with that information, but maybe hit him behind a lefty. Like try to trick the Cubs into bringing a lefty in the game. I don't know.
One of the big offseason storylines is what they do at shortstop. Do they do this again? Do they run this back? Because he's half of a tremendous player. He's a really good defensive player. And even if the metrics don't like adore him, he's still competent at the very, very least, and certainly better than that. And has not let his bad offense impact his defense. I just don't know how much longer you can have that bat, especially in a lineup where you don't have a lot of thumpers and kind of relies on everybody passing the baton. Well, the baton stops at the nine spot if Joey Ortiz is in there most of the time. But I don't know. All right. Jill Frankel. She said she's interested. I'm interested to know what you think Craig Counsell is thinking now about leaving the Brewers. Do you think he's bummed? I know that he left really for the money, but the past two seasons for him have to have made him wonder, right?
Well, this is a different question after the Cubs
won. Now that they're playing each other. Yes.
Yeah. I don't think he regrets it.
I don't think he does.
I don't know. Like, I don't think you do that move if being liked in Milwaukee is something you truly ever cared about. And so I think he's in a different place for sure, as he alluded to. The Cubs are a well-run org. They have more financial resources. The Brewers have kicked their teeth in the last two regular seasons. But they're at the same exact spot in the postseason. He's also making, I don't know if you know this, he's making $8 million this year. And I would have a tough time being upset making $8 million a year. I would love to try it though. I'd love to put that theory to the test. I don't know. I can't pretend to get inside the man's mind. But I don't think he regrets it. So hey, maybe that makes you want to boo him even louder. Go ahead.
I think we certainly put him on a pedestal as a Milwaukee guy. He's from Milwaukee. He grew up around the Brewers. He played for the Brewers. He was working for the Brewers even before he became manager. How can we think of him as anything less than a Milwaukee guy? He checks every box. But also, he's a Marlins guy. He's a Florida guy because he was huge for the Marlins when they won a World Series. He will be beloved forever in Miami. He's an Arizona guy. He will be beloved forever. He's a League Championship Series MVP for the Arizona Diamondbacks in a year that they won the World Series. He's won rings in two other places. And you better believe they love him there in those places. This is not to say that he's not less of a Milwaukee, that he's less of a Milwaukee guy. But sometimes I think we forget that these players, with rare exception, with the Clayton Kershaws of the world, they don't spend their career in one place. And therefore, they can't get completely attached to one place. That's just not how a pro sports career works. And so sometimes I think we just expect this, like, loyalty is even too strong, but we just expect this affinity and this awareness of the organization as like, that's just them coming home. And it doesn't have to be that way, you know? And heck, Craig Counsell can still like physically live at home because he can commute to Chicago. Like he's not even uprooting his family, even though, you know, he's got kids in college, but like, he's not even really doing anything that disruptive. So if you can get paid $8 million and keep doing the job that you love and do it on, I mean, let's be honest, that's a higher plane of existence in terms of visibility. You know, Chicago is infinitely bigger than Milwaukee. We know this. It's a promotion. It is a promotion, even if happens to be that the Brewers are the better team the last 2 years. And I'm sure that doesn't, like, that's not something he completely ignores. But, you know, I'm sure he feels like he made the right call. And if the Cubs beat the Brewers in this series, he will absolutely feel like he made the right call. If not, no, he'll go get him next year. I mean, he still has to feel. And I think, honestly, I think this is right. This is like SEC versus a school that's maybe ACC. You know, like, can the Brewers win a national championship? Can they win the World Series? Absolutely, they can. are the Cubs just always going to be on like second base, you know, like born on second base because they have the resources? They are. He's always going to be closer to a championship. The Cubs have to execute that. They have to follow through with that. But the Brewers have a lot, have to have a lot more go right than the Cubs do to win a championship. That's just the way the economics work. So I think he's probably happy with that decision, if I had to guess.
Boy, if I wasn't mistaken, I would have said you were sounding like a big counts defender there, JR.
Nah, man, that guy betrayed us.
You cannot be
right in the back. Okay.
No, you cannot be a Milwaukee guy, and you cannot have ever claimed to be a Milwaukee guy if you do that one thing. I'm sorry, that's simply the way it is. And like, I don't know, I still go back to like the ultimate competitor, one of the most difficult things to do in baseball would be to lead the Brewers to a World Series. I would have thought, based on his words, that the most meaningful thing to him in baseball would be to bring a World Series to Milwaukee. He said it. He said that. And then to basically dip on that at the first chance you get to go manage the Cubs, like, not a Milwaukee guy. Anyway, I still don't think he regrets the decision, though, if to answer the original question and stop editorializing.
Yeah. But a Cubs job that was occupied at the time. We forget how cold that was, that he just straight up took another man's job. How did that happen?
Arguing, while saying he was trying to do it for the he was taking the money for the
all other managers
of managers. And just I know those words never directly came out of his mouth, but let's not be stupid and not and media illiterate here. Where do we think all of those leaks were coming from? Come on now.
Oh man. So
question, please. Next
Matt Brummett from London, United Kingdom represent. Matt Brummett said, I wondered what you guys thought is the likelihood of these five young pups being on the opening day starting rotation for 2026. He lists Priester, Mizorowski, Chad Patrick, Robert Gasser, Logan Henderson. This is something I'm sure we'll talk more about in the off season. Freddie Peralta will be a hot topic. And Matt actually follows here. That obviously involves trading Peralta. Not sure if his performance this year increases or decreases that possibility. Is that your rotation next year? Priester, Miz, Patrick, Gasser, Henderson. I would take it.
I think Woodruff is in there. I also think Peralta is in there.
Yeah, I do too. I do not think they ultimately trade him.
I think they run it back with both of them next season.
I mean, Woodruff is a little more complicated because you have to know what his health situation is. Is he going to be healthy to pitch next season? And then will they sign him to a contract? But I do think Peralta ends up coming back. At least that's how I stand right now. You could change my mind after three losses in a division series, and then we'll see. I don't know. But all five of those guys are going to start games if they're healthy, I would think. I mean, I think the one question there would be, do they look to trade one of those guys as a means of dealing from a surplus? And is Jacob Mizorowski for sure going to be a starter going forward? I sure think so. But, you know, he's got a long way to go, I think, to be reliable there. So we'll see. Danny Noonan, he asks, why would our game time hinge on the Yankees-Red Sox game? And why are the potential start times dumb by like 60 to 90 minutes in one direction or the other? So he's referencing the fact that tonight's Yankees-Red Sox game, the Major League Baseball put out two scenarios. The Brewers play at 1 o'clock if the Yankees win, which is what happened, or they play at 8 o'clock if the Red Sox had won. Why does an American League game affect the National League format? Because they're on different channels. And I honestly don't really know. I don't know, other than I know Major League Baseball just adores the Yankees as the
market
them all.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's a reason that these channels aren't locked into certain time slots.
Yeah, actually, I mean, we were hearing that TBS was locked into certain time slots, but I don't know if that's quite how.
Well, inherently not, because they were available to have a 1 p.m. game and an 8 p.m. game on Saturday, and they ended up.
But those were the two time slots. It's just
no. The Phillies are playing at 6.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
I think the Yankees are the late game.
Yes or no? I think the Yankees are a 4 o'clock.
No, the Mariners might be the late game. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes, Mariners, Tigers.
So they put the Yankees in the better slot.
Also, college football to deal with on Saturday. So I don't know if that necessarily had an.
There's no college football to deal with on Saturday. Get out of here with that.
Yes. No teams in Wisconsin are playing on Saturday except the Milwaukee Brewers. There is no other Wisconsin sports that we're aware of at this time. Steven Anderson. Hey, real quick, though. I guess like the thing that's always that surprised me with that scenario is they really just don't hold the Red Sox up the same way they hold up the Yankees. Like the Red Sox, I feel like are kind of quote unquote big market, but I just don't know if they are. I think it's just really New York and maybe LA are the market favorite.
There's two teams that run this show. Yep.
Okay. Steven Anderson asked, will the World Series parade go through downtown and end perhaps at the lakefront or Summerfest or through the Miller Valley and end at the stadium? I love the Miller Valley idea. That's different, a little different. I think it goes right down Wisconsin Avenue, though. Like that just seems to be the thing.
No,
the Bucks did it.
But the parade, it ends with everyone inside the stadium.
It should, like, yes.
You're not going to have the logistical nightmare of a parade downtown in downtown Milwaukee and then you end up and then you have to move everyone to the stadium.
Well, the Bucks didn't end up at the stadium. The Bucks had,
Bucks are different
out front.
Yeah. They don't host 40,000 people. I guess maybe not. I guess historically like MLB teams don't end up inside their stadium. Do they?
I don't know. I have never seen a championship Major League Baseball parade. You might be surprised to learn. No, I think they end up just having a stage and talking.
I think they do it downtown. I don't think they mess around in West Milwaukee. I don't think that's something that would be the best, like logistically the best idea.
I think they'll do it as an homage to the 82 team. When they lose the World Series, they're absolutely coming down Wisconsin Avenue.
I can't believe they did that, JR.
I mean, you gotta keep in mind that the team was 12 years old. It was still, by most standards, a very young franchise, and so people, I think, were just so jacked up to have.
But they were still only 20. They won a World Series 25 years prior.
They did, and then that team got taken away from them, and then they were like, "We're gonna celebrate this. We're gonna celebrate this."
This is the most consistent through line of my life. When I first read, I think it was like a Hodger Court history book. And I think I was like eighth grade and I read it about it was the 82 Brewers and how Robin rode in on the Harley. I was like, wait a second. who cares? They lost. Still the best team in Brewers history though.
Yep. They were incredible. And they won a playoff series, which the Brewers have not done since 2018. Jim Paella from Blue Sky, he says, can you share any specifics on how this team is preparing for the NLDS? Also, Quintana Woodruff updates. Speaking of pitchers, any status updates on how McGill and Hall responded after Sunday's game? Related, I kind of loved how McGill got the win as the pitcher of record on Sunday. Can't plan for that, but I thought that was great.
Happy. Huge deal. Really for getting the win. Quintana threw on Wednesday. We know this not because we were able to come to the ballpark. We were locked out. But the Brewers posted some photos, and Jose Quintana was on the mound. So guess who's starting game three? It's Jose Quintana, probably. Quintana. The Brandon Woodruff update, JR.
Friday, I think.
This has been a...
Weird.
It's been an unusual handling by the Brewers is the way I would put it. When this injury initially came down, I think if you read our coverage, you read what I wrote, there was a lot couched in there of look, I wouldn't be optimistic that he comes back at any point this season. And there has been no update since then. The Brewers have said multiple times that they're going to give an update shortly, including Tuesday. They said they'd give them at the end of the day. And then we're waiting and they're like, yeah, we don't have an update. So I think it'll come down Friday. The Brewers are going to have to announce something one way or the other. That's what they have set this up as. But I have not received any indication that would lead me to believe anything different than what I believed after first talking to Woodruff in St. Louis. That's the update.
Something's weird here. Either they're getting multiple opinions. And,
well, they did. But that was a while ago. He's been on the IL for.
So I guess I don't know.
Theoretically, he could be activated on Saturday. He's been on the IL for almost 15 days.
I mean, that would be a heck of a left turn if all of a sudden Brandon Woodruff is available to play on the division series roster. I wonder if this is a situation where
this car turns. This is not NASCAR. That's what I'll say.
I don't think so either, but I, if I'm an optimist, I'm thinking, is this because they're still trying to see, like, yes, he's hurt and maybe he'll probably even need some sort of procedure done, but could he pitch through the pain? I don't know.
And that's where, like, I'm like, that's where my question marks come in, is like, as I guess it's not the Brewer's job to like give people the answer to this necessarily, but that is what people start to think when you, you know, have an up, don't get an update. Like, well, are they just trying to like, hi, is he coming back? It, the mind starts to go in optimistic ways. And I don't know if it's going to end up that way. So I don't know if, you know, this is just being strung along unnecessarily, I guess, is
sure.
What I'm saying.
I mean, the pessimistic thing though, is that, oh, they need to make sure that he's, cause he's going to get surgery. That's going to knock him out for all of next season again. You know, that's,
well, I don't think there's surgery involved. I don't think that's,
I don't think so either, that's not, but that would be, that would be the pessimistic view of like, why are they waiting? Because it's really much worse than we thought, or it's much better than we thought. It's probably going to be just what we thought. And then we're going to be really confused why three more days had to go by before we got a Brandon Woodruff update, but hopefully Friday. So follow along on JS Online, social media, you know, our social channels. We'll see. We'll see if we can get some information on Friday. This is from Mouse Bumples. Great name on Blue Sky. When do the Brewers need to announce their NLDS roster? Also, in case of injury, are there special playoff injury lists, or are they still standard length, 10 or 15 days, I think? Any anticipated roster differences if facing Chicago or San Diego, for example, more right or lefty relievers or anything? I mean, I'll answer the basics. The roster is not due until the day of Saturday, so mere hours before first pitch is when that roster is going to get announced. As you can imagine, teams wait until the very last second, so other teams can't nimbly, you know, make adjustments based on what personnel you're putting out there. There aren't special playoff injured lists, but if you must be replaced in the middle of a series, you are out for the remainder of that series and the next one. So if you leave a division series game, get replaced on the roster, you can do that. But then that player who left injured cannot pitch again or appear again in the division series, cannot appear in the championship series, could come back for the World Series though. So essentially you're going to get a de facto 10 or 15 day injured list. It'll be longer than that. You'll miss that amount of time throughout the course of this. But I think that's pretty much all there is to it. As far as roster differences between Chicago and San Diego, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Would there be somebody that's going to make the roster now that wouldn't have if San Diego had been the team?
That's a good question.
We miss out on a Brandon Lockridge revenge game. That's too bad.
I do think, like I said, I think Miz as a Padres matchup is a little better. But I'm not sure the roster is inherently different. I do think the Padres lineup is easier to maneuver because they just have this pocket of lefties at the bottom, and then they got these righties at the top.
Yeah.
And that's pretty easy to figure out, and we saw Council do it pretty, like, by the numbers in that series. And the Cubs definitely have some spots for lefties, but it's not like in the same way that the Padres do.
Yeah. All right. This is from Birds, Brews, Bucks. Do you know if there will be any rally towels like in years previous? I don't know the answer to this, but probably they have had them pretty much every year.
Probably. I haven't, I'll say this. I didn't look actually. I walked out that way and I didn't look for towels. I haven't blatantly seen them. But I'm assuming they have them because they always do.
Yeah. Not a fan. And I think most people aren't. I think the people who are like into the stadium making the maximum amount of noise is like, don't give people something to wave, because then they're not clapping. Then they're not making noise. They're just waving. And it's aesthetically pleasing, but there's not enough volume. Here's Party P on Twitter, I think this is. You guys have talked about how there is no longer organ music in between pitches at the ballpark. What are your thoughts on adding a mom and pop polka duo live from Bernie's Chalet, providing said musical musings to truly roll out the barrel in the seventh inning next year?
Sure.
I am not into that. That's not going to work. I'm sorry.
No, that's too much.
Too much. It's very Milwaukee, very Wisconsin, and I appreciate that, and I like it, but no. Playing chicken with Oblivion has a few questions. How does compensation work for the non-roster be ready guys? Do they get a major league salary? Are the Brewers paying for their housing? Do they get a full playoff share? Is this stuff governed by the CBA, or do different teams handle this differently? These are great questions, and I am sure they do not get paid the full salary for being on taxi squad, but no. I am not positive about some of that other stuff.
I would venture to guess it's the same as the regular season taxi squad pay.
Yeah. There's a bump probably because they're
yes. You know. It's a bump from the 40 man pay. And then playoff shares, the players divvy that a whole thing up, and that goes much deeper than that.
Yes. Is it governed by the CBA? I would imagine there's some stipulations in there, but it's every team does do this differently. The shares are certainly handled differently because different clubhouses will award those shares differently. So, anyway, okay. Next question. Rhys Hoskins is a good power hitter with a clutch playoff reputation. Why have the Brewers been so quick to give up on him as a playoff contributor? Is his thumb still sapping his bat speed and power? He's a respected pro who will say the right thing, but is he really okay with being cast off like this?
Well, I think we saw that try it early. I think the answer is like in the usage. They didn't just cast him off right away. Sure, they cast him to the bench, but it seemed like it'd be a pretty relevant bench role. And then Jake Bowers got really hot. And so he got bypassed as the first baseman off the bench. And like the at-bats haven't, frankly, looked very competitive. And I think that's the answer. To me, it's as simple as that. He has not looked good and not given them reason to give him more at-bats.
His last question then is, why does Pat Murphy distrust Tobias Myers? He could be a right-handed complement to Ashby in a multi-inning role, but it doesn't seem like he's anywhere close to Murph's circle of trust. Perplexing. Ooh, I would add that similar thing about a different pitcher, but what do you think? Why isn't Tobias Myers? I mean, this is the guy who started game 3 for them last year, and I'm not sure he's on the roster this year.
Wait, who's your other pitcher there?
Oh, Craig Yoho. Nowhere near the circle of trust. So far from the circle of trust.
Well, Craig Yoho didn't exactly pitch great in the big leagues.
Yes, this point is well made. Tobias has some results here too.
Yeah, they didn't give him the chances. I mean, that's fair, but
yes, no leash.
No, that's a good question. Tobias has a repertoire to attack hitters of both sides. The kind of the split change. It's a bit of a difference maker for him in some spots. He can give you some length. I don't think he's fully out of the circle of trust, but you can tell, like, yeah, by his usage, he has been diminished in terms of his leverage. And, like, no doubt, I think 3 weeks ago, I would have told you he would have made the playoff roster as an intriguing bullpen option. And maybe it's Chad Patrick. Maybe it's, like, their desire to their belief in Miz. Those are probably the two guys that it ultimately boils down to that we think we'll make the playoff roster over him, but not much of me would be surprised to see Tobias Myers make it instead of Miz.
Yeah, me neither. It's a question of safety versus a safe option versus do you want somebody who could be a hammer? We just haven't seen that hammer. So I would totally go Myers, but I could see why they want that X factor potential that they maybe wouldn't have with another player. Speaking of hammer, and Hammer Time asks a question that we kind of already answered. Why were we told by the manager that they would have an update on Woodruff by the end of the day yesterday and not told anything? Let's just rip the Band-Aid off already. Amen to that. We don't understand it either. Nikki Clamps, Fall of Frelick, Autumn of Andrew. What do we think about those things?
Well, the follow works. Yeah. Good job, Brewers Twitter.
Yeah.
Good job.
I'm not feeling either one of those things. I think whoever emerges as the shocking star of fall, we can come up with something. So get your Joey Ortiz plays on words situated here, because that's what's going to happen. In the tradition of Orlando Arcia and Unieski Betancourt, it has to be Joey Ortiz.
Has to be the shortstop. Has to be.
Scott Mueller says, is the requisite stay for optional assignment 10 days, 15 days still in play for the postseason? So we talked about that a little bit, how it is, but on the front end, but it's kind of handled differently during the postseason. Is this also Scott Mueller? I think this is another question from Scott Mueller. Is Luis Arias going to be part of the taxi squad?
No.
Sorry, Luis Arias. Mitchell, over under 9 outs recorded total for Mizorowski for the entirety of the playoffs. Oh boy. Oh, 9 outs for the entirety.
That's so good.
That's a really good number too.
The real question there is, do the Brewers win the first series?
Right. So let me say for certain that they play through the NLCS. That makes it a little more interesting, because if they don't, there's no way he gets that many outs. But if they do,
he could implode in the NLDS still and not make the NLCS.
Of course.
Boy, oh boy. I'm going to go. I think the Brewers win the series, but I'm still going under. Just completely contradicted what I said at first.
I'll take the over to spice it up. I think maybe he gets a little bit of a prolonged run if they get to the CS because there's more games and there's just more innings to be had. All right, Troy Engaboose. Well, let's lock it down here. This is the last one. Do we have a direct answer yet on why all of a sudden Yelich was hitting leadoff the last week? Our best lineup during the win streak and after was Sal leading off and Yelich in a run producing spot. Was it more for at bats to hit 30 homers? I don't understand the change.
Pat Murphy wanted to try some things.
That's it? That's the whole thing?
Well, I mean, there's a little logic within that, but the main answer is Murph was sitting there and wanted to try something out the last week of the year. Personally, I don't really care about batting order too much, but I also don't love shifting your order around this late in the year. I like Terang as a leadoff hitter, frankly, because he has some power. He has the ability to produce as the guy who's hitting the most on your team. Like, he's arguably their best hitter. He's able to run. He can draw a walk. Like, he can put together a good at bat. And I don't know. I just, that's my preference. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
All right. Before we get out of here, we got to predict. What do we think? What's happening in this series with the Cubs?
We got the Brewers in five. Oh, absolutely nothing would surprise. I think absolutely nothing would surprise me except a sweep.
My kid is running in a state cross country meet on the 11th, Saturday the 11th. Can't have a game that day. Would miss that. Don't want to miss that. I'm enjoying watching the cross country team. Great sport to watch if you're a parent. I mean, you're outside, great weather. You're in and out in like an hour. Great sport. I need that series to be over in four, and so it shall be. Brewers in four. They win that game in Wrigley to do it. I think they take the first two at home. Hiccup with Quintana on the mound, but come right back on Thursday and take care of business and move on to the NLCS. Woo! It's happening. Kurt, the World Series drive has begun. It's beginning on Saturday, 1:08 p.m. in the afternoon. That's when the Brewers will be taking on the Chicago Cubs, Craig Counsell's Chicago Cubs, to get us started here down the playoff path to a World Series. Kurt, anything else?
I will be there.
Well, so will I, yes.
Probably. Okay, so.
I don't know. I'll be there on the 11th too, even if it means missing something. But I don't want to. I don't want to. To honor the state middle school Lutheran school cross country meet, I need the Brewers to take care of business in four. Thank you for your understanding and your attention to this matter. That's gonna do it. Long one. Thanks for sending in those questions. Appreciate that. We'll probably do that again at some point in the future, although I can't say when. I think we'll be back in our usual spot. We'll only have one game to discuss, so we'll see. Maybe we have to push that a little bit to try to capture what's going on Monday, but we'll play that by ear a little bit. Thanks for tuning in to Microbrew, folks. We will chat with you again very, very soon. Enjoy the playoffs as much as you can, and we'll talk then. Bye-bye.